I walk into meetings at studios, and the receptionist always thinks I'm the messenger. They always send me. I'm like, no, I'm supposed to be here.
Why is it I can hold the whole world hostage? I'm scared of going on one stupid blind date.
Because love is harder than crime.
I've always been a very emotional person. My mother would say, Rue, you're too damn sensitive.
How do I look? How do I feel? How do I look?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. History's most homophobic papacy ends, Debs fight evil as a lesbian filmmaker conquers Hollywood, and the return of a drag diva reveals her more reflective side. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 9th, 2005. Death ended John Paul II's 26-year reign as the Roman Catholic Pope this week. Some have not hesitated to label his the most homophobic papacy in history, although no other pope had to contend with a global movement for lesbian, gay, and trans equality of the same magnitude. He took the throne in the wake of the momentous Second Vatican Council, which had raised hopes for a church that was more democratic, more open to discussion on a range of issues, including homosexuality, and more ready to join the modern world. But John Paul viewed all of that as part of what he called a culture of death, and resisted it by reinstituting a strongly centralized church structure that enforced traditional doctrinaire positions. He repeatedly denounced homosexual orientation as objectively disordered and intrinsically evil, and called the politics of equality an ideology of evil, contrary to what he viewed as natural law and universal truths. Under his leadership, programs of church outreach to lesbian-gay Catholics were dropped, lesbian-gay Catholic groups were denied meeting space in churches, gay supportive clergy, educators, and congregations were threatened and punished, church employees were dismissed solely for lesbian-gay orientation, and those who chose to identify themselves as gay supportive by wearing the rainbow sash were denied communion. Some say these actions return the church to its stances of the 1960s.
But John Paul's church was also actively engaged in opposing lesbian-gay interests in the political realm, fighting any mention of them at the United Nations and in countries around the world, not only urging the faithful to lobby against civil rights legislation, but directly threatening Catholics elected to public office in opposition to any legal recognition for same-gender relationships. That opposition actually led his Vatican agenda for his final year. Some believe John Paul sought to scapegoat gay priests in the recent exposure of sexual abuse of minors by Catholic clergy. John Paul also strived against equality for women, and in a papacy that extended across the entire history of the AIDS pandemic, he vocally opposed the use of condoms for prevention to the very end. His passing raises hopes for many seeking changes in the church, but given that he appointed almost all of the cardinals who'll pick a successor, there's little reason to expect any major turnaround on lesbian-gay issues in the near future.
The modern church's treatment of lesbian-gays pales beside Islamic Sharia law. As practiced in Saudi Arabia, it's resulted in jail sentences and floggings on charges of deviant sexual behavior for about 100 men arrested at what's been described as a gay wedding in Jeddah in March. The international group Human Rights Watch reported this week that 35 of the men were tried without legal representation behind closed doors in late March. Most of them received sentences of 6 months to 2 years behind bars, plus 200 lashes, but four were sentenced to 2 years and 2,000 lashes. Unless administered in installments, 2,000 lashes are apt to prove fatal. The 70 others who were released following arrest were later summoned by police and simply advised that without representation of any kind, they'd been sentenced to a year's imprisonment. Human Rights Watch was also told by one detainee's friend that the alleged wedding at a rented hall was actually a birthday party. Police raided the event following a phone tip that the men were behaving like women. HRW spokesperson Scott Long said, "Prosecuting and imprisoning people for homosexual conduct are flagrant human rights violations. Subjecting the victims to floggings is torture, pure and simple. HRW charges Saudi Arabia with violating not only the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but also the Convention Against Torture, to which it is a signatory. The International Commission of Jurists also condemned the convictions and sentencing.
Activists in the Pacific are up in arms at the 2-year jail sentence imposed this week by a court in Fiji on an Australian tourist and his Fijian sex partner. Both Thomas McCosker and Dorendra Nadan pleaded guilty to violating Fiji's Unnatural Act and Indecent Practice laws. They asked for leniency, and while the magistrate declared their act to be something so disgusting it would make any person vomit, he could have sentenced them to as much as 14 years imprisonment. Although Nadan is 23 years old and the sex was consensual, the magistrate described McCosker's part in the act as bordering on pedophilia and told him, if you wanted to have fun, you should have stayed in Australia instead of trying to come to Fiji and exploit our young boys. McCosker claimed he was unaware of the Fijian laws he broke, and Australian government travel advisories do not specify them. Australian activists are calling on their government to intervene. A gay group in Fiji has already been working for repeal of the two penal code statutes, which some Fijian legal experts believe are discriminatory in violation of the national constitution since they apply exclusively to sex between men.
In the U.S., voters this week made Kansas the 18th state to amend its constitution to deny marriage to same-gender couples by a landslide margin of about 7-3. The Kansas amendment also states that no relationship other than a marriage shall be recognized by the state as entitling the parties to the rights or incidents of marriage, a clause critics say could deny a number of benefits to unmarried heterosexual couples, as well as same-gender domestic partnerships. Proponents of the amendment had more than 4 times as much campaign money to work with as opponents, according to the latest figures available. More than 80% of the amendment's funds came from out of state, with almost 2/3 of it from the national Catholic group Knights of Columbus, and almost 1/6 of it from the Colorado-based Focus on the Family Christian media empire. The campaign against the amendment was largely supported by small contributions, but about 14% came from the national lesbigay advocacy group Human Rights Campaign.
13 other states have similar amendments against same-gender marriage now in process, but this week, 2 state legislatures were actually advancing the legal standing of gay and lesbian couples. Connecticut's state senate this week approved the creation of Vermont-style civil unions for same-gender couples to give them most of the state-level benefits of marriage. The margin of victory was a veto-proof 3-1, with half the Republican senators joining almost 90% of the majority Democrats. Other Republican senators attempted without success to attach a prohibition against same-gender marriage and a statewide referendum on the bill. The Connecticut House is also expected to pass the bill, but the Republican minority leader is hoping to delay it, and other opponents have vowed to put up a fight.
Meanwhile, both houses of the Maryland state legislature have given the green light to creation of registered partnerships open to all unmarried couples, although limited in scope to medical issues. Those would include medical decision-making in event of incapacity, visiting at the hospital or riding along in an ambulance, sharing a room at a nursing home, and authority to determine the handling of remains after death. The Maryland Senate gave nearly 2-1 approval last month, and this week more than 60% of the state house agreed. Also this week, more than 70% of the Maryland Senate followed the State House in approving the addition of sexual orientation and gender identity as categories protected under the state's hate crimes law.
Hawaii's Senate this week approved 2 civil rights measures, one to protect transgenders from employment discrimination and the other to protect both transgenders and lesbigays from discrimination in housing and real estate transactions. Both passed by 4-1 margins strictly along party lines, with Republicans opposing the majority Democrats. The House had previously approved both bills, although a conference committee will have to work out language differences with Senate versions.
The UK Appeal Court has supported the parental rights of a non-biological lesbian mother in its first ever ruling on a case of this kind. The 3-judge panel unanimously reversed a county trial court's ruling and ordered joint custody of 2 girls for their biological mother's former partner of 8 years. The 3- and 6-year-old girls were both conceived by artificial insemination during that relationship, and the women shared responsibility for them before the breakup. The joint residence order was the only legal tool available to ensure the girls' contact with their non-biological mother, a contact the appeals panel called a vital side of the girls' family life. The justices made clear that they were extending the same treatment to the co-parent as they would to a father in similar circumstances. That status will be secured for couples who contract the civil partnerships the UK will begin to offer late this year.
And finally, when New Jersey's James McGreevy in August became the first governor of a U.S. state ever to publicly identify himself as a gay American, it was hardly a triumph for equality. He announced his pending resignation at the same time because of the scandal of having cheated on his wife with a man he'd previously appointed to a high-paid state job despite a lack of qualifications. That man, Israeli national Golan Sepel, alleged that McGreevy had sexually harassed him, although his threatened lawsuit never materialized. But the nonetheless historic episode has now gained some glory for the Newark Star-Ledger newspaper. For the work of 50 of its staff on the story, the Pulitzer Committee has awarded the paper journalism's most distinguished award in the breaking news coverage category, praising its comprehensive, clear-headed coverage.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 9th, 2005, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
If you thought RuPaul was red hot before, just wait until you get a taste of her I'm Back CD later in the program. As an 11-minute adolescent, Angela Robinson's Debs premiered at the 2003 Sundance Film Festival and wowed gay and lesbian film festivals around the world. The grown-up 90-minute comedy that made its bow at Sundance last year is now hitting theaters around the U.S. This Way Out's Steve Pride found the biracial lesbian filmmaker to easily be as engaging as her film.
My goal as a filmmaker is to make a movie that's so entertaining that you actually forget that the characters are gay or straight and you just get swept away in the adventure.
Voted one of the 25 new faces of indie film by Filmmaker Magazine and among the 100 people to watch by Interview Magazine, writer-director Angela Robinson is changing the gender, sexual, and racial perceptions of Hollywood. And as a bonus, she has a smile that lights up a room.
My name's Angela Robinson, and I am the writer and director and editor, actually, of Debs. The premise of Debs is that there's a secret test hidden in the SAT, and if you score particularly well on this test, then you're recruited by the government into a top-secret agency for girls. And in this particular adventure, one of the Debs falls in love with the Debs' arch-nemesis, Lucy Diamond.
You can do this.
Why is it I can hold a whole world hostage? I'm scared of going on one stupid blind date.
Because love is harder than crime. Okay, now knock them dead, but not really.
And when they meet, sparks fly, and instead of killing each other, Lucy asks her out. So it starts our kind of star-crossed lovers on their path where Amy, the top member of the Debs, has a secret affair with Lucy, and they pretend that she's kidnapped, and it's what happens in their relationship when they're found out.
What's that movie with Jodie and the little dog falls in the well with the lotion?
Silence of the Lamb.
You're the Lamb.
What?
The idea of Debs actually originated a couple years ago. There was this girl who I met in film school at NYU, and she, in our first week there, told me this story about how she'd been recruited by the CIA because of a secret test in the SAT, and that they'd been tracking her ever since. And I totally believed her. I was like, wow, I didn't know they did that. And she totally had me going for like weeks until I realized she was just pulling my leg. And it had always stuck with me that that would be a very funny premise for a movie.
The journey of the feature film Debs to the big screen began in 2002 when Angela got the money to make a short film called Debs.
I heard about this grant. There's an organization called Power Up run by Stacey Cotico, and their mission is to give grants to women filmmakers primarily and make lesbian movies primarily, I say, because sometimes it verges. And so they had a contest, basically, where they were going to make three shorts. And so I devised a story about, it was a mock WB show, actually, in 10 minutes, kind of making fun of Buffy or Charmed or the kind of WB teen shows. But this was called Debs. And it started, like, previously on Debs and was serialized. And in the short film, Amy and Lucy are having the affair, and Debs think that Amy's been kidnapped. And so they race to save her while she's basically having sex with Lucy. And so I kind of created this premise and submitted the short and got the financing. So we had 4 days to shoot the short and $20,000 to make it. And that was the original genesis of the short film. And then the short went to Sundance and got picked up as a feature.
It's hard for any woman to break into what's traditionally been a boys' club. So the number of working lesbian directors in Hollywood is in the low double digits. But what sets them apart from their straight male peers is that in a dog-eat-dog business, these successful gay women remain remarkably supportive of each other.
I know a lot of lesbian women who are directors, and I really do think lesbians help each other out. I don't know if it more so than other women or people for that matter, but I feel a kinship, and I'm not sure why that is, but I know that, I mean, even the fact that there was this organization Power Up that was out there, like there's a lot of organizations that kind of support the general notion of women in film, but there's kind of luncheons or discussions, but that doesn't ultimately really help you. You need money to make movies so that you can get a shot of people seeing your work. And Power Up was so fantastic when they came along because it was just an organization geared to making movies very tangibly to increase lesbian representation. And that was remarkable because as a filmmaker, you're just out there and you can have all sorts of stories you want to tell. But if you don't get the money or the resources to get them out there, then, you know, you're totally cut off at the knees. So I do think there's an incredible support system and you kind of meet people throughout. And I do think there's some sort of bonding and generosity of spirit that really is there in the community.
Angela Robinson is a biracial woman. She is a lesbian. Her favorite outfit is old tennis shoes, tan chinos, a big t-shirt, and her favorite golf hat. She doesn't fit the traditional stereotype of a big Hollywood director, but Angela doesn't see that as an obstacle.
My folks really kind of raised me with this notion that was very fundamental, that there's no barriers for you, that there isn't anything that you can't do in your life, be it race or be it that you're a woman, or they didn't know I was gay at the time. So, and that really has served me so far. And primarily you're working like on crews with white straight men who are much older than you, or I walk into meetings at studios and the receptionist always thinks I'm the messenger. They always send me like, I'm like, no, I'm supposed to be here and I have an appointment and I'm not crashing the building. And I walk in and I feel like there's this kind of static, like the first time that people see me, and I'm not sure what they're expecting, but I know it's not me, basically. And then there's this little like, bzzz. Then you just kind of approach them very straightforwardly. You sit down and you start talking intelligently about their project. Then people just accept you and then they just move on. And I feel like it just comes down to the work. And if the work is good and what you're saying is interesting, and if you're treating people with respect and you're not going to screw it up and lose them all their money, knock on wood, then people kind of get over all the other things really fast. And they just kind of go, okay, good. You're just a person.
Besides being the writer, director, and editor of Debs, Angela Robinson has also written for the Showtime series The L Word and recently completed production on a $60 million remake of Herbie the Love Bug for Disney. For links to further information on Debs, Angela Robinson, or Power Up, point your internet browser to prideonscreen.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening. I think I'm on another world with you.
I'm Patricia Nell Warren, author of The Front Runner and its sequel, published by my own publishing imprint, Wildcat Press, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
She says she considered hanging up her high heels, but one of the world's most famous drag divas is back on the scene with a whole new attitude. This Way Out's J.D. Doyle gets the red-hot secrets from the one and only RuPaul.
It's hard to believe she's been on the music scene for 20 years now. And who would have thought a drag queen 6'4" tall, in stocking feet, from Atlanta would end up with hit records, a TV show on VH1, and appearing in a number of movies. She's published her autobiography, is representative for a major makeup company, and hosts a morning radio show in New York City. Right now, she's celebrating the release of her first new album in a number of years, called Red Hot. Before we ask her about it, here's a taste of a song from it that's an answer to those against the idea of gay marriage.
I see you look at me and judge me with your eyes. Your words are meant to hurt and cut me down to size. Why must I explain to you? He loves me, I love him too. What on earth has that to do with you? So you criticize, do you realize I'm a person just like you? Not gonna run and hide just 'cause you decide.
Tell me about the new album.
I'm very excited about RuPaul Red Hot because it's my first in a long time, and it's the first time I really ventured into certain areas of my human emotion on a record. I talk about my breakup of a relationship, a long-term relationship. Actually, I sing a few songs about it, and I sing about gay marriage and being free and having the right to do whatever you want to do so long as you don't hurt anybody. Plus, it's a lot of the stuff that I've been known for, you know, the hot, pumping dance tunes that are full of optimism.
There are a lot of messages in this album on a variety of areas. Was there a conscious effort to put more meat into the lyrics?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of time to work on this album, and I had a lot of time off. I took some time off to really go inside and take an emotional journey, a journey that I never had time to do all the years before when I was really, you know, turning out so much product and doing so many different things. So I've always been a very emotional person. My mother would say, Rue, you're too damn sensitive. And it's true, I am. So the album reflects who I am. You know, before, on my other records, I really wanted to, you know, not necessarily play it safe, because drag has never been safe, but I wanted to, you know, not sort of hit anybody over the head with you know, my ideals. I wanted the music to just be fun and for people to enjoy it. Now, you know, I'm older and I own my power more than ever before, and I wanted to say something that was relevant.
I've been living in the shadows, a dark and lonely place, an empty room without a window, no sun upon my face, but I'm coming out into the light of day. Don't stand in my way. I made up my mind. It's time for me to shine. This moment is all mine.
Is the song Coming Out of Hiding also sort of a coming out anthem?
It is absolutely a coming out anthem, but it also was my doctrine to come back to the scene, to come back to being a public figure. I had basically living a very personal life for the past 4 years. You know, it was my way of saying, okay, I'm ready to come back to be the RuPaul that everyone knows, and actually more of the RuPaul that people don't know.
Because it was more personal.
More personal. You know, when I started out in show business, it was the dream of a kid, of a young kid, who wanted to be famous. And I got famous, and I was able to do a lot of great, wonderful work. But then, you know, I'm not a kid anymore. And I achieved that goal, and, you know, I can't continue with the original dream. I had to figure out why I wanted to do this anymore. In fact, I thought for a minute I probably wouldn't come back to it. But I did come back because I have a lot more work to do. And plus, you know, there's nobody else out there doing what I do. You know, and I feel like I have a duty to some of the younger kids to show that there's more than one way to see the world. There's more than one way to sculpt your life or to sort of mold your life.
Well, it's like you created yourself and you're doing it your way.
Absolutely.
Tell me about Looking Good, Feeling Gorgeous.
Well, Looking Good, Feeling Gorgeous is a very optimistic song about owning your God-given beauty. You are God's gift to this world. All of us really are. And it's about owning that. And it's an affirmation that you should say every single day. You know, a lot of kids out there don't feel that way. I get a lot of emails from kids who are stuck in some town in Texas or Indiana who feel so disenfranchised and feel like there's nothing for them out there. Well, this is an anthem that says, you know what? You are gorgeous. You're fabulous. Go out and strut your stuff.
And RuPaul certainly struts her stuff on our new album, Red Hot. This is J.D. Doyle, and you're listening to This Way Out. How do I look?
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Martin Rice, Steve Pride, and J.D. Doyle contributed program material. The Only Ones and RuPaul performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. And remember, you can email tworadio@aol.com to ask for our emailed monthly This Way Out updates and or to receive our weekly program promo messages. That's tworadio@aol.com. This Way Out is supported by charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please find out how you can help keep us on the air and get our tangible thanks by visiting our website, thiswayout.org. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WPSU and WPSB University Park in Kane, Pennsylvania, KGNU Boulder, Fort Collins, and Ward, Colorado, 5GFM Kadena, South Australia, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody's going to stay tuned.